I used to think manipulation was the highest form of control, that if I could master behavior, body language, and cognitive psychology, I'd be untouchable. But this isn't about control anymore. This is about collapse. Season 6 begins where my certainty ends. The walls I built with persuasion methods, shadowed secrets, and human dynamics, they're cracking. My mind is racing, spinning through every failed mitigation technique, every twisted ethical standard I ever bypassed, just to stay in control. But the market psychology of trust is crashing fast, and no one's buying the story I used to sell. In the silence of the server room, I see it clearly now. Evan was never the threat. My obsession with power was. And now I'm trapped in the stories I engineered, watching my own cognitive skills betray me. This isn't a game anymore. This is what it feels like when a con artist starts believing his own performance. And the truth comes back to finish the story he thought he could control. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. There's a sound your mind makes when it starts to splinter, not a scream, not a snap. It's faster than that. It's mind racing, thoughts chasing thoughts in endless, chaotic loops, a blur of strategy, paranoia, half-rehearsed damage control, 1,000 cognitive techniques all failing at once. You don't feel yourself losing control. You feel yourself trying harder to simulate control. That's the first sign of unraveling. I used to move through the world like a surgeon, precise, intentional, detached. Now, every room I entered triggered a silent war. A glance became a threat. A silence became an accusation. A breath too loud. Too timed, sounded like audio manipulation. I couldn't tell if people were watching me, or if I had just spent too long watching myself. Evan's presence still lingered like smoke. His absence was louder than his footsteps ever were. But the story he left behind, what he engineered in the shadows, that was the real trap. Because now everyone questioned everything, and the more they questioned, the more I questioned myself. I sat in the server room at school that night, one of the few places where silence wasn't suspicious. Just fans spinning, machines blinking like passive witnesses to my collapse. I ran my fingers across the monitors, pulled up files, old message threads, a map of connections I once used to pull people apart and stitch them together. Human dynamics, once so easy to read, now looked alien, foreign. Was it Evan? Or was it me? Had I engineered so many stories that I no longer remembered what was real? I reviewed my own manipulation playbooks, every technique I had developed, every persuasion method, every behavioral psychology tactic, every dark psychology layer I'd honed to a science. But now, they felt dead, like static. Because tools and tactics don't matter when your opponent isn't trying to beat you. They're trying to erase you. The next morning, I walked through the halls and tried something I hadn't done in years. Nothing. No smirks. No glances. No body language games. I let the current carry me. I observed the social dynamics without attempting to steer them. And that's when I saw it. People weren't avoiding me. They were adapting to a world without me. It was market dynamics, but with trust instead of currency. And I was watching the stock of my influence plummet. There's no crisis button in a manipulator's mind. There's only deeper planning, more overthinking, more layers of mitigation techniques that don't fix the damage. Just engineer new distractions. But you can't outthink deep emotions when they're your own. And complex emotions are slippery. They don't obey logic. They drown it. That night, I opened a journal I hadn't touched in years, back when I first studied cognitive psychology like it was a religion. Inside, I had once written, "Control is not power. It's the illusion of stability inside chaos." And for the first time, I realized how manipulated I had been. Not by Evan. Not by the students, but by my own belief system. I wasn't playing the game anymore. I was inside it, and it was folding in on itself. The server room was never meant to be a sanctuary, but in a place built on whispers and back doors, it became the only space I could still hear myself think. No footsteps, no fake laughs, just machines, buzzing like static anxiety, housing more truth than the people they serviced. I didn't come here to hide. I came to remember. Because when the world outside starts questioning who you are, the only place to start is with what you control. I sat alone in front of the old terminal. Blue light flickered across my face like cold fire. I used to log in to monitor student patterns, study social groupings, track academic shifts, reroute disciplinary outcomes. But now I logged in with a different goal, to audit my own manipulation, to trace every string I ever pulled, every shadowed secret I buried inside clean-looking files, every PS1 named folder that hid emotional triggers I'd mapped on classmates. I used to call it game exploration, a harmless term. But what I found was anything but harmless. There were messages I forgot I sent, fake screenshots I had spliced, anonymous surveys I had rigged to discredit others. My own trail of social manipulation was deeper than I remembered. And for the first time, I saw it all without justifying it. No ethical marketing excuses. No leadership psychology angles. Just damage. Calculated. Clever. Surgical. But damage nonetheless. One file stopped me cold. A folder labeled Echo. Inside, I found a video, one I didn't remember recording. It was me, talking to Jasmine. Years ago, her voice cracked with gratitude. Mine, smooth, rehearsed, reassuring. You can trust me, I had said. No one else needs to know what we talked about. Except I'd archived it. Labeled her as emotionally volatile, high-yield empathy subject. I stared at that tag. And suddenly, I wasn't in the server room anymore. I was underwater, choking on the weight of who I had become. I tried to delete the file, but the system wouldn't let me. A lock code, one I didn't recognize. And in the file metadata, an edit note, ethical standards modified. Admin override logged by Evan M. I froze. Evan had been in the server. He had seen everything. Not just the manipulations, the blueprints, the architecture, the code of the con artist I had become. I leaned back in the chair, eyes wide. This wasn't just unraveling. This was infiltration. My safest system was now his evidence locker. I stood and looked around the room. It didn't feel like a sanctuary anymore. It felt like a confessional booth I hadn't chosen. And somewhere in those walls, a copy of me lived. One Evan could trigger any time. One he could use. Not to expose me, but to replace me more perfectly than before. Because nothing kills a myth faster than the truth hiding inside its original design. There comes a point in every manipulator's journey where the story begins to betray itself. Not because the lies weren't convincing, but because your brain starts to fight the very reality you engineered. It's called cognitive dissonance. When the mask doesn't just slip, it turns around and asks you who you are. I'd spent years building identities like houses of mirrors, each one reflecting back what people needed to see. Guided by cognitive psychology, fine-tuned through NLP techniques, sharpened by my own internal catalog of persuasion methods. But now, I couldn't tell if I was the voice in control, or just the echo. And when your internal monologue starts second-guessing its own sincerity, that's not survival, that's collapse. After the server room exposure, I began running what I called the cognitive dissonance protocol, a failsafe. A mental checklist I'd built over the years for crisis containment. Step 1. Detach emotionally. Step 2. Reframe the narrative. Step 3. Regain control of social perceptions. It had worked during every past breach. It had rescued me from tears, confessions, even suicide rumors. But this time, the protocol malfunctioned. Because every technique I tried, every ethical leadership phrase I threw into conversation, every psychology tip I deployed felt borrowed. Not from someone else, from me. As if my mind no longer trusted its own commands. I caught myself staring into the mirror longer each day, practicing facial expressions, checking for sincerity like it was a surface I could scrub. I tried scripting group conversations again, using social positioning tactics, emotional cues, exam techniques I'd invented for rapid judgment. But it all came back warped. Too fast, too shallow, too forced. It was like watching a con artist rehearse a role he'd outgrown. Only now, the audience knew the lines. I attempted to write new scripts, to evolve, to lean into positive influence and true leadership concepts, the kind people post in motivational reels, hoping it makes them real. But authenticity isn't something you can reverse engineer, especially when the foundation is cracked with shadowed truths and market manipulation psychology you no longer believe in. I broke down in the art room, alone, midday, no one saw. I sat in the corner by the broken easels and whispered into my hands, "I don't know who I am when I'm not manipulating." And that terrified me more than anything Evan could do. Because who was I, if not the version that could bend a room with just a glance? What remained if you peeled off every layer of game exploration, every mitigation technique, every damn skill I ever forged? Would there be anything left at all? Later that night, I scribbled something onto a note card and shoved it into my desk drawer. It read, "If the system breaks, don't fix it. Rewrite it. but this time, without the lies. But I didn't believe it when I wrote it. I just needed to see the words exist. Because sometimes, we write truths we hope will one day become real, even when they aren't yet. Even when they never were, the body never lies. It can be trained, conditioned, mimicked. But deep down, underneath every calculated smile and deliberate pause, it tells the truth. And lately, my body had started betraying me. There was a time when I could walk into any room and own it, without a word. I'd studied body language like scripture, angle of the head, shoulder tension, micro expressions, how to project confidence without looking like you were trying to. I knew the science. True body intelligence, it was my edge. Even more powerful than words, because people don't listen with their ears, they listen with their instincts. And for years, mine told them I was safe, sharp, trustworthy. But now, even I could feel the shift. My posture faltered during conversations, eyes darting too fast, hands fidgeting just slightly, breath shallow, speech inconsistent. Things I once used to decode others now betrayed me. Even my walk changed. I caught it in reflections, a slight hesitation, as if I wasn't moving through the hallway anymore. I was bracing for it. People noticed. Not overtly, but instinctively. Their reactions dulled. Trust waned. Influence softened. No one said, "He's slipping," but they felt it. And in a world ruled by social manipulation, feelings are the market signals. Body intelligence was my currency, and it was crashing. In a last-ditch effort, I returned to my old observation tactics, watched others, tracked subtle movements, restudied the group behavior dynamics I once manipulated with ease. And that's when I saw it. Evan. Effortless posture, relaxed shoulders, natural hand movements that mirrored those around him, forming quick unconscious rapport. He didn't study the room. The room responded to him. And that made me realize something horrifying. He hadn't just stolen my techniques. He had evolved them. He wasn't pretending. He believed his role, which meant his body language wasn't a tool. It was truth. And mine had become a glitching performance, a stuttering echo of a confidence I no longer owned. That night, I stood in front of the mirror shirtless, arms crossed, posture slumped. I studied every inch, the tension in my jaw, the twitch in my right hand, the asymmetry in my shoulders. These weren't stress symptoms. They were signals, the kind of signals I used to read in others, now screaming from inside me. I whispered to my reflection, "When did I stop being real?" And the mirror didn't answer. But the way my eyes avoided their own reflection, that told me everything I needed to know. Manipulation starts in the mind, but it lives in the body. And when your true body intelligence rejects the lies your brain's trying to sell, you don't need an enemy to destroy you. You'll do it yourself. It didn't explode. It cracked. Like ice under pressure. Like glass under breath. Control doesn't shatter all at once. It erodes in pieces. And by the time you notice it's gone, you're already standing in the wreckage, pretending it still holds you together. I woke up in a house I didn't recognize. My own. Same walls. Same posters. Same perfectly stacked books on human behavior and cognitive skills. But the feeling? Foreign. Empty. Like I was squatting in the ruins of someone who used to know exactly who he was. School was no different. People still smiled. Still said hello. But behind their eyes, there was something I'd never seen before. Not fear. Not awe. Not even hate. Indifference. And for a manipulator, that's extinction. I tried to recalibrate. Pulled out every page of my personal playbook. I attempted to restabilize work dynamics, sway group behavior, lean into old persuasion methods, even tried subtle NLP techniques during casual lunch conversations. But everything felt off script. The timing was wrong. The tones fell flat. My words sounded like recycled ethical leadership quotes from a broken audiobook. Even my body, my once flawless vessel of influence, trembled with market emotions I didn't recognize. Panic, disassociation, grief. I walked the halls and started seeing my legacy in reverse. The girl I helped find her voice now avoided my eyes. The boy I once mentored now repeated phrases I had fed him, but with resentment, not gratitude. They weren't remembering what I did for them. They were reprocessing what I took from them. And Evan? He didn't gloat. He just observed, not with judgment, with clarity, as if he knew. I was finally looking at myself without the lens of strategy, and I hated what I saw. Back in the library, I found an old notebook I'd hidden between copies of Cognitive Psychology, Revised Edition, and The Art of Subtle Influence. Inside were fragments, scripts, thought maps, mind maps of market psychology, emotional tipping points, and manipulation arcs I used to design like art. But scribbled across one page, one I barely remembered writing, were five words. Control is a beautiful illusion. I stared at it for nearly an hour. Because now? Now I finally believed it. I didn't eat that night. Didn't speak. Didn't move. I just sat on the floor of my room, watching the digital reflection of my past self flicker across an open laptop. Clips of me, performing, advising, manipulating. And the worst part? I looked so genuine, so convincing, that even I almost believed I had meant every word. But now, I was empty. Not broken, not angry, just blank, like the code had run out. The algorithm, exhausted, and as I stared into the black screen, I whispered, "You won." I didn't mean Evan. I meant the dark force I created, the thing inside me that was never satisfied, the version of me that saw every smile as leverage, every tear as strategy, every person as a market to be studied and moved. That version? It didn't just win, it replaced me, and now? Now I didn't know if I wanted it back. If you spend long enough engineering stories, one day, you wake up trapped in the last one you built, and by then, the exit has been designed by someone else.